What's really good, everybody? This is Nathan Allbach, and welcome to the podcast where we get into people's stories and go down a bunch of rabbit holes about what's really good in the world. So we've been covering the topic of internet culture a lot on the show lately, and not just because it's directly related to my job and personal interests, but also I just feel like it's been clear that internet culture has been impacting the real world for a long time, and in recent months that's becoming much more apparent. So I feel like it's worth rambling about until all of you just tell me you're sick of it. So, I mean, that seems fair, I think. But lately I've been mostly interviewing just online creators and people who work within the culture itself. So I thought it'd be great to have someone on who actually reports on all this stuff, you know? So for today's episode, I had the pleasure of speaking with Taylor Lorenz. Taylor is a staff writer for The Atlantic and specializes in reporting on tech and internet culture with an emphasis around Gen Z and like Instagram and just new app trends. She has a super long career in journalism as well as social media marketing. She's written for The Daily Beast, The Hill, People Magazine, Business Insider, and a bunch more. In our conversation, we covered some of her personal story and just what it's been like having worked in both the worlds of reporting and marketing, which, as if you've listened to the show, you know, I think it's just like a fascinating intersection because, I mean, at least in my view, the internet has sort of blended parts of these worlds together, you know, since so many new jobs have been created in the past 10 years especially, and really just changed the landscape, you know, since there's a ton more demand from different styles of writing now. So there's like, there's still the traditional institutions of journalism, and now there's also these new media companies that have emerged, and a lot of them are more focused on marketing. So we went back and forth on that for a bit. Then we also talked about some of the weird ways brands have been integrating more and more into internet culture in recent years, just from like the whole humanization trend on Twitter to them using social media influencer campaigns, and yeah, I mean, you know, all that weird stuff. It was great getting to talk to Taylor, and if you don't already, make sure you follow her on Twitter and, more importantly, Instagram, which they're both just at her name. And as always, feel free to hit me up on my Twitter or email or wherever really with show feedback. And yeah, I think that's it. Now let's get into what's really good. Taylor, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's going to be a good time. I've waited a long time for this moment. So.
I'm excited.
It's always fun talking about anything internet culture related. And it's crazy because I remember first following you on Twitter and seeing that that is essentially what your job is as a journalist, which blew my mind just because, like, I know that exists. Obviously, we've seen people tech reporting, been doing this for a long time, but it's just still so crazy how that's an actual industry. And like,
yeah.
I know you've done like a whole range of work over the years. So like, just to get us started here, like how did you make your way into this strange position?
Actually, about a decade ago, which is crazy, but like, to end of 2009, 2010, I graduated and I was like working at a call center and just like a bunch of other temp jobs that were really shitty. And somebody introduced me to Tumblr, and I didn't really have social, like I had social media in college or I had Facebook in college, but I didn't really spend a lot of time on social media until I discovered Tumblr. And then I got obsessed with it, like addicted to it. I spent like literally like 16 hours a day on Tumblr. And I'm not kidding you. I ran this like network of Tumblr accounts. I ended up just making a bunch of popular, like marginally popular Tumblr accounts. And that got a bunch of people from Tumblr following me who helped me get a job running social media for brands. And I did that for a while. And then I ended up getting into media and kind of like writing about social media stuff, I guess you could say, like internet culture.
Right. It's so cool. Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah. It's like there's these competing worlds. And I talk about this a lot with social media because you have the kind of natural progression of public profile sites, like the people that jumped from maybe like Zanga to MySpace to Facebook to Instagram and all that. And then you have these deeper web communities like Tumblr and Reddit and all these, like, they're different worlds. Like, when you get immersed into that world, it's like, it's a lot different in describing it to people who are maybe on the outside, just like what that's like.
Well, so, yeah, but I would say Tumblr in 2009 was a little bit like, it was more like Twitter than Reddit or anything. Mm-hmm. Like, I never had those other ones or MySpace or anything like that. But like there was so many media, like 2010 to 2011 was when like every media company thought Tumblr was really valuable. So like journalists were on it. Like a bunch of like journalists got their jobs like through Tumblr. Right. Like Tumblr was really relevant then in a way that it's not now. So it worked out. Like if I spent 16 hours a day on Tumblr now, like it wouldn't lead to anything probably, but at that it was just the right time, I feel like.
Yeah, right. And I remember too at that time period, everyone, like, whereas now when you go to Facebook or Instagram, you see screenshots of tweets. Like at that time, everyone was sharing screenshots of Tumblr posts, which was such a different time.
It was also just like brands weren't as on the internet then. Like Facebook only got brand pages, I think, in like maybe 2009. Like it was all very new. So it was just it's totally different internet landscape, but I always miss old Tumblr.
It was a different era back then. I mean, just the old internet in general. This is a repeat topic for me with this podcast. It's just the people I talk to, we always get into kind of the old versus new guard, where it seems like around that time period after maybe like 2012 or 2013, it feels like the threshold to get onto the internet was just it basically disappeared. So everyone was on all of a sudden, and it was like all these deeper web communities. It seems like they didn't change overnight, but they changed just in like a really, really short period of time because a mass influx of people joined them.
Yeah, it's sad. I think the platforms just changed. Like, it's funny, I was thinking back to like the 2012 election, and like a bunch of my friends had stuff that like quote unquote went viral, and like the threshold for that was so low back right. then compared to now, and like where everything is viral all the time for like a minute. So it's kind of weird. It's a big change. I can't believe that it's already been almost 10 years since I've like been online. That seems like forever.
Yeah, it's wild.
Here I am. Yeah.
So like, how do you, like, this is your job, and obviously you can't really define internet culture as like an amorphous blob because there's so many different sects of it. But like, how do you personally define or even just begin to talk about what internet culture is?
It's a really good question. I mean, it's such a weird category because basically internet culture is just like, I mean, like you said, the internet's become so mainstream, and like everything that was like quote unquote internet culture is kind of just mainstream culture now, right. Like influencers, like memes, just covering these platforms in general seriously, like Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, like they all have huge impact on our life. So it's kind of just like, I like to think of it as how, I mean, my, like, the things that I write about most is, like, how the internet or technology is changing the way that people connect and communicate. Mm. That's, like, the general theme of what I report on.
Yeah, like, when we talk about the culture itself at large, I mean, there's just so many factors to consider. Like, I'm in the middle of writing about this right now, and I'm having such a hard time because I want to focus on what I know, and I spend most of my time on Twitter, so there's a lot of, there's a lot of history with, like, weird Twitter there, and the people who came from weird Twitter kind of came from something awful and like the early forum days. So like there's like that whole sub community, but then there's an entire other huge category of like sports Twitter, which is dominated by like Barstool and all that, you know?
Yeah.
So there's that whole thing. And then, you know, there's YouTube and like you said, Tumblr and Reddit. There's all these other deep communities. So like, granted how wide it all stretches, like for you right now, what subcultures are the most fascinating?
I really like I don't like the negative communities. Like I hate like bro Twitter or like sports anything, to be honest. Like no shade, but I hate it. But like I really like new ways that people are using technology. So I write a lot about like emergent behaviors on these apps. So I did a story like last summer on actually how Twitter became the number one platform for nudists, which is like kind of random, but it's like basically I interviewed about tons of people in like the nudism community and sort of like why Twitter is their default place. I mean, parts of it has to do with the terms of service and they can't post nudes on other things, but it's also like this weird closed community where like there's no, if you're not part of it, you really aren't part of it. Like it's, they really have created their own world on Twitter, and I just think it's so cool, and it's like they're so strict with how they enforce like boundaries. Like if people try to come into that world, like, and in a negative way, like they're very, like they drive them off basically. And I don't know. I just thought it was interesting, like how they were using Twitter to create this like very cohesive community. Cause Twitter now is just so fluid and it's hard to consider. I mean, other than like politics, Twitter, weird Twitter, it's hard to like think of a lot of like super niche communities that thrive on Twitter. So,
right.
Yeah, but I don't know. I don't have any particular communities other than maybe some pet ones that I'm in that are like my favorites.
Yeah. like nudist Twitter.
I mean, I just like those people were so nice and cool. And like, I think it was really interesting to like think about how different terms of service affect like what communities can sort of thrive on your platform.
No, that's so true. It's been a huge topic recently. I know the whole Tumblr thing changing the terms of service. And that's like, that's been one of their biggest, you know, areas where people were able to, like, you know, obviously there's pitfalls to all that. You can talk.
I think, with Tumblr it was like porn stuff that exactly. they're trying to like, which is like a little bit different, but like, it's weird. But I'm always looking for new kind of subgroups, or really new ways that people are forming communities or connecting with each other using technology.
Right. So I'd love to get into a little bit just how your job kind of intersects with the culture in these weird ways, because journalism as an industry has just been changing so much with the state of the internet, like obviously, as you know, been working for over a decade. So like, I'd love to hear your thoughts on just how your job intersects with the culture, just because it seems like the more these two worlds collide, like the more journalists become tethered to just the constant push and pull of like the culture wars that are happening, like especially on Twitter, because like Twitter is where almost every journalist is nowadays, and like it's the 24/7 hell cycle. So like you see like they're really tied close with what's going on with politics, and then it kind of also veers into shit posting. And
I have to tell you, I don't pay attention to any of that. Like, it's not even on my radar in my world. Like,
really?
I think I have 260 terms blocked right now, but like, I block anything even remotely related to like anything that's like trolly or politics or anything. Mm-hmm. Like, I have no politics in my feed. I kind of just wiped it all out because I feel like for me, it was taking away from my ability to like do my job best, which is finding other stories. And yeah, like I don't really pay attention to that. Like I also actively don't write about the negative parts of the internet, like troll type of stuff.
Right.
Like that's sort of an intentional. I covered politics for 2 years, and I covered the 2016 election and then like the first year of Trump's presidency. And I got so burnt out by all of it and like that whole part of the internet that I just kind of like maxed out. Yeah. So it's been about a year and a half. And I really, I think the last thing I wrote about trolling was when trolls took over Taylor Swift's app last year. That was like the farthest that I got in. But Twitter's still hell. I mean, it's still a really stressful place to be.
But yeah, you can't escape it to a certain degree. But like, has your mental health been better since then?
Like it's funny. So I wanted to write this thing on screen time. Like I feel like my mental health is fine. Like, I mean, or like as fine as any like other millennial, but like, I mean, like, I don't know. I just block a lot of stuff. I have like a million search terms blocked. I have like, I only see followers I only see replies from people that I'm mutuals with.
Mm-hmm.
So like, it's kind of fine. Yeah. But I've been doxxed a bunch before, which has been annoying. Like I have a new phone number. Cause like, people have published that. That's like always hard and invasive, but at the same time, like, I don't know. I don't really come into contact with like that. The most negative communities I come into contact with are YouTube fans.
Mm.
Like when I was covering a lot of like Logan Paul or PewDiePie made like a video on me and like stuff like that. That's the only negatives.
Yeah, you get that.
But that's like,
because our audience is so big, so it's like you're gonna get those influx of just trolls.
They're big and they're extremely online. Like they're big audiences, and they're also like hyper online audiences. So they're just gonna like fuck with you. But it lasts for like 2 days, and then you know life goes on.
Yeah, I was gonna ask because I mean that's something obviously a lot more people are dealing with that as time goes on with the internet, and I've personally started to deal with it a little bit in the past maybe year or so. Just the whole, I haven't been doxxed, thankfully, but like I've had situations where like people are finding my public profiles and trolling me and sending like hateful stuff, and I know that that's really common, like just in the industries like journalism and so any work on social media. So for you, it sounds like You're just like brushing it off your shoulder like it's not that big a deal.
I think like what I went through covering politics, especially as a woman and dealing with so much like, I mean, just so much like blatant misogyny. And like, mm-hmm. I can't even imagine what it's like to be like a person of color and go through, because they also experience this every day. But like, I'm so desensitized to it. Like, I just sort of have this like really negative view of humanity now. And I just am totally desensitized to it. And so I can't even like, I don't know. Like, I got attacked by this men's rights activist, this whole thing on like thread on me, like, I don't know, a year and a half ago. And like, just these people, I mean, it was insane for like 3 days, just saying the most vile, hateful stuff, like mean stuff about my body, my like everything about life. And like, it's so awful. But then it's also just like, ugh, I'm at the point now where I'm just numb to all of it. So
wow.
That's how it is now.
Yeah, that's good. Rough. I mean, and it sucks too, because especially with what you do, I mean, your job is internet. Like, you're on the internet
online.
Day. Yeah, so like, you can't escape from this stuff. So like, for you personally, going through all that, I mean, it's one thing to say like, well, I'm numb to it or whatever, but like, obviously this is still taking, I'm not trying to play therapist here, but like,
oh my God, no, it totally takes a toll. Yeah. I would say if anything though, it's taken less of a mental health toll, because I think I'm really good at like compartment. I think it's more like changed my view of like so much stuff. Mm. Like, I was just thinking about this, like how my opinions on things have evolved like in the past 10 years. Like, I used to just have a lot of opinions that I completely disagree with now. Like, yeah. I think I just used to believe a lot of stuff. And like, now I'm like, oh, okay, the world is really fucked up. And like, now I see.
So are you saying you went from being a more hopeful person to a more cynical person?
No, because I'm really hopeful, and I overall think technology is like, I'm like a, of anything, like a booster for like, I think overall, like, we're in a more positive place because of technology. I'm like very pro, but I would say like my views on other things maybe have changed, like capitalism and stuff.
Yeah. Well, even just like your own views on views. Like, for me personally, I think about this a lot with Twitter specifically, again, just 'cause that's where I spend most of my time. But it's just the idea that there's people like us who work online, but then there's people who just spend all day and night online on their own, in their own time, just because what they want to do. And like, they're constantly, no matter where you go, no matter what corner of the web you go into, people are constantly injecting their two cents into everything. And it's so,
oh my God, you know? I know.
Oh, it's so weird because like, okay, you just said, yeah, like the person you were 10 years ago to now, you've changed all your opinions, and that's great. And I think there's a lot of that capacity for us today to look in hindsight at who we were 10 years ago, because we have sort of like an internet database to be like, oh, this is a person I used to follow. Like, this is stuff I used to read or write about. And it's like, we have the opportunity, I feel like, to have more perspective, to kind of look internally at ourselves and think, okay, I used to think this way, now I think this way. Like, I'm going to take a step back and have some more patience. You know what I mean?
I think what it's made, actually, two things. I think it's made me more empathetic towards marginalized groups, and it's made me have less tolerance for things like racism and misogyny and things like that. Like, and I think that being subjected to harassment, like, and going through some of that stuff, like, that's like, ultimately, that's the result. Like, that's what it's resulted in for me. That's very positive, I think, I'm very grateful for that. But at the same time, I have less tolerance for blatant hate and terrible things online. Like, I'm just very much like, no, it's completely not acceptable. Whereas, like, I think if you had asked me, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, like, when I was really just not, you know, I just didn't have a very broad worldview. I think I didn't see a lot of problems and stuff. And, I probably would have brushed off a lot of stuff or made leeway for people that were really doing awful things. And now I'm like less inclined to do that. But I also don't fight with anyone online. It's just pointless. It's just, you just block. Yeah. So I never, ever argue with anybody, because it's like, whatever. I'm like, this is just a crazy person. I'm blocking them.
Yeah. It's like, you don't have time for it. Like, who even is this person? Like, why have I warranted my time, my personal energy?
I mean, like I said, because I just don't cover politics anymore, because I just don't like deal in those corners of the internet. Like, the harassment that I get now is like like, admit Logan Paul is the best YouTuber. Like, we're not, like, you know, it's like, whatever. But yeah. I don't know.
It's way easier to deal with that 14-year-old than it is
to deal with. It's just, like, mostly kids. Yeah. And also, like, I'm like, whatever. I was probably insane as a teenager, too. Like, if you had come for Backstreet Boys,
right,
like, when I was in middle school, like, that would be me online, like, being insane. So, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of it's changed just for myself personally, too. I mean, you mentioned just your overall sensitivity to these issues and to different marginalized groups and how your worldviews developed. I feel pretty similarly in the sense that I think maybe 2013, like when Black Lives Matter started to launch onto social media, and it was being talked about and posted about everywhere. I remember specifically, like, I had cared about different issues prior to that, but that was a big turning point for me where I was realizing, like, where I was spending the most of my time online, what I was talking about, what I was researching, and, like, I started just to think more personally about, like, my place in all of this and how limited my perspective was in so many of these areas that just immediately it sucks because, like, that movement started and then it kind of, you know, dovetailed into all these other really cool social movements. But along with it, instead of it becoming like a space and a time for people to process and understand, I mean, like any other time in history, I guess, we just have this immediate backlash where people just revolt and then everybody just has to raise their two cents. And then it just feels like so much of the conversation over the past several years has just divulged into outrage. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. Outrage stuff is real. I mean, I guess it's bad in that sense that the internet's very toxic, but I mean, it's hard. Like, for me, I feel like being connected and having my worldview broadened was really positive. And that's ultimately, like, what these big, you know, open social networks do. But that can be very negative. I mean, it can end up radicalizing kids, especially if they're because they are being opened up to more opinions. But, like, if those are the wrong ones, like, I just have written a lot about YouTube recently. And like if you basically, like, broaden someone's world, but broaden it to the wrong, like, to the wrong group, they can end up with people getting really problematic, bad views. Like, right. I'm just thinking of YouTube's bad algorithm and if they're ever going to do anything about it.
I know. So. Well, it sucks so much too, because as an adult now, like, I feel like from growing up with it, and I kind of have a broader, just like you're saying, like, a broader scope of where some of these channels are coming from, what types of views, what types of rhetoric I'm going to get from them, and it helps me as an adult to navigate them. But when you're a kid and you're just being fed the algorithm and, like, kind of you're able to just trip down this rabbit hole way easier, I mean, it's scary, like, what some of the stuff you can lead to for an impressionable kid who doesn't have the cognitive or just the, like, emotional intelligence to know, like, this is good or this is bad. Like, they're just taking it all in, you know?
Yeah. Well, there are, like, I mean, a lot of kids are still, I mean, all kids, they're just trying to find their own identity. And so they're very driven to some of these, like, very strong personalities online. And that can be very problematic sometimes.
Yeah, exactly.
So
something else I wanted to get your take on is just how, like, internet culture as a whole, it seems like marketing has just injected itself into every area, right? I mean, like, it sucks because, I mean, it's really, it feels like every industry, but it's because we're all, like, now fighting for clicks and for attention, you know? And I think it sucks because I think journalism is one of the industries that's been most affected by it in a lot of ways. Where, like, we've seen the rise of more clickbait styles of media just over the past decade. And now, like, so many of these publications have realized that that's the type of content that makes them money. So, like, news stories in a lot of contexts have become more sensationalist just to compete with other outlets that are also doing that. So, like, from the outside looking in, just from where I'm sitting,
I think that's a business model. And I think that's a decision that people, I mean, I'm just thinking, like, of my time writing headlines and, like, working as a social media editor, like, a lot of times, like, I wouldn't say, I don't think, like, people freak out about headlines or, like, oh, clickbait. Like, right. I don't think I worked for a lot of tabloids. I don't think a sensational headline is bad. Mm-hmm. I think, like, what's bad is if the information in it is inaccurate. And
right,
I think
exactly.
that, like, that's a problem, and that maybe that degradation of news, that's a problem. That's more of a structural, like, business model issue, which is that it's really hard to make money. You know, local news has been gutted. A lot of our sort of more traditional news sources, like, have had a lot of problems adapting to the web. And so, you know, you are, but then at the same time, you have these other people that are just, promoting basically misinformation and exploiting people's like lack of media literacy. So yeah, it's really sad. I hope that people can figure out more sustainable business models for journalism, because it's definitely like an industry-wide problem.
Yeah. And like you said, I mean, I think there's definitely something to be said about headlines that are clickbait sort of style, but are also accurate to what the story is about. Like that to me is, it falls in line perfectly with, you know, the ethics, I guess you'd say, of like what the right, you know, what journalism
is. Yeah, like you want to make a good headline. Like I hate the word clickbait because it's like, first of all, I think clickbait actually is gone. Like a lot of clickbait was like early, like 2012 to 2015, which is like, you won't believe blah, blah, blah. And then you click and it's not that. I think most people, when they say clickbait now, what they usually mean is some kind of sensational headline that's false.
Yeah.
And the problem is not like, it's the false information. And like, that's a problem. But I think it's like, I do think like, I'm sympathetic to some news organizations that, you know, like want to sell the story as good as possible. Like if you make the story boring, like no one will actually click
exactly.
it. So I think
it's
totally fine to have an accurate headline that sells the most interesting part of the story. That's the job of a good editor and a good headline writer and a good social editor. But like, you know, publishing misinformation is bad.
Right.
So
yeah. And then, and because of that whole, like just need for clicks, I guess that's more I'm
but
getting
like,
at.
But like, I mean, people like, yeah, but like, by the way, like no big journalism institution relies on clicks. Like that hasn't been that way forever. Like people will be like, oh, like New York Times, you're just doing it for the clicks. Like, no, they're not. Like literally they're not. And it's just like the people that feed off that type of like, I don't know, maybe like blatant just traffic grabs are like really low quality sites. Like, and especially now in whatever year we're in, 2019, like clicks are less important than anything. Like, you know, the web is much more optimized for engagement. We have all these better metrics. Like, it's kind of stupid. I really hate the word clickbait because it's like, that's not usually not what people are complaining about. And like most journalism places are not like worried about page views anymore. Like that was very like 2012.
Right. And it's much more like what you're talking about too, like company, like you work for the Atlantic. So like with the Atlantic or the New York Times,
there's
like,
no
they're
traffic
not
goals.
About that.
No, it's never like we're never doing that kind of stuff. Like, I mean, that said, like it's fine to write something and know it'll do well, but like there's no way that we would ever like, and I say we meaning like any journalistic institution that I've ever worked for would like alter a story to include misinformation, I guess. Like,
yeah.
Like I said, I've worked at tabloids before, so I feel like I really understand like what it is to like sell the juiciest bits of the story to readers. But like, there's a really big difference between that and like what I think people have issues, which is just like publishing blatant misinformation and then like capitalizing on that. Like people, like it's these websites that publish like blatant falsehoods that play into people's, you know, prejudiced beliefs and then rake in traffic and monetize it like that. Then you're just like monetizing prejudice. It's not really like, I don't know. I just hate that whole conversation. And
yeah,
I've never
yeah.
worked anywhere that's been an issue. So it's just like, I don't know. I'm just kind of like, whatever. People say that stuff.
No,
people don't really
totally
say that at The Atlantic because The Atlantic really doesn't oversell. But like other places I worked, I don't know.
Right. Yeah. So maybe just like switching out like the terminology instead of calling it clickbait, maybe like we could frame it in the sense where like you're talking about more traditional institutions like The Atlantic, The New York Times, Wall Street Journal.
We don't publish misinformation.
Like, yeah.
We don't publish misinformation.
Right. Right.
And people complain about, I don't know, whatever.
No. Yeah. It's totally understandable. I'm sure it's exhausting.
I'm not a media reporter and I can't speak on behalf of anything except myself, but it's just that like, I don't know, the clickbait conversation to me peaked in like 2013.
I think most people like in how they see that conversation today, like is just through the lens of essentially what we called new media companies like BuzzFeed or UpRocks or like really any of these companies that they focus on just cultural issues that are seen through the lens of internet culture. And they're just they're much more like online based versus your more traditional institutions like what you were.
But BuzzFeed News. Yeah. But BuzzFeed News doesn't publish clickbait either. Like,
right. But that's like a separate institution, like to BuzzFeed,
totally.
Which
exactly.
I think people get confused on too. Cause it's like, you think BuzzFeed, that's not news, but like BuzzFeed News is an actual news.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I think like just especially like between the two of us, just knowing people who work with these this style of like newer media companies like BuzzFeed, it's difficult to even have conversations like this, because like for someone like me, just temperamentally, like how I view media, I love The Atlantic. Like I'll read The Atlantic all day versus I've never really been a fan of BuzzFeed, not BuzzFeed News, but just BuzzFeed as the website. So like it's easy for someone like me, I think, to criticize that whole like sphere of new media and just be like, oh, like it's clickbait or it's sensationalist or whatever. But like for someone like me in my position to judge the people that work as writers in those positions, it's just silly. Because, like, I know personally firsthand, like, how bizarre the job landscape is today being a social media manager. And, like, there's a market demanding people in my shoes to represent brands in all these weird ways.
By the way, like, people that hate on people that make shit for BuzzFeed, it's like, what the hell? Like, you're making something that people are consuming.
Right.
Like, you're feeding a need. And by the way, you're making users happy. You're giving them entertainment. Like, you're giving them a fun, you know, I don't get that. That's just, to me, like, that's like the kind of people that, I don't know. I've actually written for a lot of those, like, kind of, I don't know, different types of new media sites. Mm-hmm. And it really bothers me when people that were really snooty about my writing then take it more seriously now because I write for a more traditional place.
Right,
it's like, okay, well, if you were negging at me when I was at Mike.com, like, don't come for me now, like, saying you're such a fan of my work.
Exactly. Because there's a market for that whole field, which is what I'm trying to say, I think. Just because, like, for someone like me, it's easy. Like, I'm very critical of what I do personally, just because I think there's, like, ethical tensions and implications and, like, you know, brands personifying themselves and all that. But, like, for what I'm doing, like, I can, like, help myself sleep at night knowing that this it's a need that is going to be fulfilled, if not by me, by some other young gun who's going to come up through the ranks and do this job. And, like, it's the same thing with writers at this point. Like, we're in this weird time with internet culture where this whole industry of journalism is changing so fast. And, like, not everyone who's going to school for journalism or creative writing or whatever is going to land a job at the New York Times. Like,
by the way, like, oh, my God, this makes me so mad. I mean, what if you don't? So what if you do? Whatever, just do what you like, especially if you're a creative person. Like, this is so stupid. Like, this is a dumb argument because I worked in advertising, too, and I did marketing for a lot of stuff. Like, and there's a lot of creative people that have worked in marketing. You have to pay the bills. I don't know what to tell these people. Maybe they don't have student debt. It's like, what? I don't know. You don't just wake up and, like, start working for The Economist. Nor should you have to, like, to be respected. And that, to me, also sounds like the same type of people that that shit on entertainment news, like, that are like, oh, like, how? Oh, wow, you went to college just to write about Kim Kardashian. It's like, whatever. You're just proving your own small-mindedness, I guess. So
I think.
I mean, that said, obviously, there should be broader conversations, like you said, of, like, ethical marketing or the need for these things in society, but to hate on people that are, like, have individual jobs, it's just dumb.
Yeah, that's where I have the most hard time with it, because, like, I don't know how much of this exists on a broader cultural level. Like, I'm just seeing through the limited lens of what, you know, what's on Twitter or what's
I was going to say, I feel like this is a thing on Twitter, because, like, I mean, I remember, like, I don't know, especially even when I did stuff for brands, like, most people think that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot of people have really boring jobs that actually working in media and marketing is seen as very cool. So, I think it's just on Twitter. People always like to one-up each other and hate on everyone.
Yeah, so, and, like, whatever. There's just this attitude that, like, I think because, like, you briefly mentioned before how, like, your views just on capitalism have changed, like, I think we're in this weird time, too, where a lot of younger people are changing their views on how, like, consumer marketing exists, and, like, it's causing them to then change their views on certain industries. So, like, instead of just looking at what you do in journalism or what I do in marketing as, you know, these are industries that are going through transitions that should be criticized where they need to be criticized, but, like, we should also still have an understanding of, like, the people that are working behind me.
I mean, I agree, but I would say journalism is very different. Like, I don't ever get that criticism in journalism. I mean, I don't know. Like, but I think, like, marketing, it's very different because it's very much like anti-capitalism, like anti that criticism against brands is like you said, like, this is nefarious. This is like, brands aren't people, blah, 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 blah.
Right,
like, that's a backlash happening. I think criticism against journalism is totally different. And I actually don't really get any of that online. Like, I really don't. Like, maybe some trolls, but, like, people hate on reporters. But, like I said, I block everything and I don't get that.
Yeah.
At all. If anything, like, people want to support journalism because they're like, oh, I mean, but that's just my own audience. I don't know.
Yeah, I see mostly that from my audience.
And also, like, journalism is, like, serving a public good. So.
Right. Yeah, it's, like, journalism is a sacred institution. Which
it's, like,
is what,
the fourth estate.
So. Yeah, exactly. Which is kind of what I was getting at beforehand, which I don't, again, like, we're already past this. But just, like, the idea that, like, marketing in some capacity has been injected into certain just fields of journalism, not the entire industry as a whole. But, like, I think a lot of people are...
like, native ads and stuff and like contributor model stuff, which I think has blurred the line. But like I said, I mean, I don't write about any of that stuff, and it's just not my wheelhouse. And because I'm not a media reporter, like I just don't really think about it ever.
Yeah.
I more just write about other stuff that, you know, like I worry about the stuff that's on my beat, I guess.
Yeah, totally. So like, I know you just mentioned that you've worked as a social media manager for brands yourself.
Yes.
Like, I've seen you post on the direction of all this a bunch before on Twitter. So like, what are your thoughts right now on like the most recent development of brands becoming more personified?
I think I tweeted, the only thing I tweeted about it recently, and my colleague Ian Bogus has like written amazing stuff on this.
He interviewed me.
Oh my God. That's right. His whole, like, this is like more his beat. I was saying recently that I think, no offense to you, I just think the strategy is tired. Like, one, not a lot of people are on Twitter. Like, I get it. Or you could make the same Instagram comments, whatever.
Yeah.
This whole like humanized brand thing, I think, is a little bit out of touch in 2019. And mm-hmm. I think if you're going to do it, you need to do it in a really weird way. Like Steakums is like doing it in a very creative way. But I think the way that most people execute on it is, frankly, it's like how I did it when I was tweeting for brands back in 2011. Like,
right. It's
like, I literally, it's like, has your Twitter strategy not changed in like 8 years? Like, it's weird. It's like, you're still doing the witty replies. Like, you're still like joke hating on your competitors. Like, but it's just like, I don't know. It's kind of stupid. And I think the novelty has worn off. Like, it used to be novel, and that's what people liked about it. Like,
right. Oh
my God, Pizza Hut. It's so funny. Now the expectation is that a brand will engage with you. And so it's kind of almost like, go away.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And the whole thing feels like it's driving off a cliff, because I mean, at this point, like,
yes,
you're saying, there's been brands on social media since like 2011, 2012 that have been trying this hat on. And then it's evolved with like the Denny's Tumblr in 2013. And obviously like Wendy's starting to do their roasts, and then
yeah,
probably gets quirky. And there's like these weird, just like kind of sub elements of personality injected into a given brand. But like where we're at right now in 2019, it does feel like the lifespan of this thing is just like, we maybe have a year left. Like, it feels,
I hope so.
You know what I mean?
It's like, so it's stupid. Also, there's so many other like amazing creative ways to like market on the internet that probably actually drive sales. Like, I don't know. And I know that it's not all about sales, it's about branding, but it's just like, I just think it's very tired.
Yeah.
And the whole like snarky thing is like just so fucking tired.
Yeah. I think it's tricky for brands too, especially just in this time, because Twitter is one of the last, if not the last frontier of basically a platform that's, it has algorithms, but it's not as affected by them as on like Facebook or Instagram.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, a brand can just jump on Twitter with no budget or anything.
Now,
just go.
Yeah. I mean, now the big thing that I see all over is the brands on the Instagram comments. Like,
right. All
the brands are like in these celebrity Instagram comments, just like being so thirsty. I think it's the same thing, like trying to get away from like the posts, but it's just like, I think what people need from brands is customer service and like not stupid jokes.
Yeah.
There's enough bad jokes on the internet.
I agree there. So like, do you have any idea, like, just granted that this is the realm of marketing, so like obviously brands are going to do what gets them clicks, they're going to do what's going to drive sales and attention and all that. So like, do you have any idea of what they might do to appeal to younger generations coming up, like Gen Z?
I don't know. It's funny. Well, I wrote a lot about like, I write a lot about influencer culture and how brands can work. Like, a lot of brands work with aspiring kids or influencers. I wrote a thing on like kids last summer selling sponsored content basically as a summer job. And I think working with kids in an authentic way is probably like a valuable thing for brands, because I don't know. It's just, I think it's hard because so many of these kids kind of like inherently recognize their cultural capital, and they don't want to like sell out to some brand. Like,
right.
they know that they're cooler than a brand almost. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's just like totally depends on the brand, but maybe paying to support some of these creators that kids love, or like actually, like, I don't know, a lot of people pay lip service to stuff. It's like International Women's Day when they all like pay lip service to it.
So
it's like, okay. Yeah. And there was a really good tweet that was like, literally ask any brand that's tweeted about International Women's Day about their family leave policy.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
They're not
that.
Actually like supporting women. And that's true. This is that, that's so emblematic of like this broader problem with marketing, is that like they come out with these beliefs or stances or a persona, but they can't actually back it up.
Right. That is the biggest problem. And I feel like that's the kind of the roadblock I've been at personally with the whole Steak'em thing. And I've had to take a big step back with our agency since the whole Sunny D tweet thing blew up. Cause it really like, it made me step back. And then I talked.
Wait, I didn't see the Sunny. Which Sunny D tweet?
Oh, from 2 months ago, the I can't do this anymore one from the Super Bowl.
Oh God. Yeah.
Like that was really the tweet that made me step back and be like, okay, this is kind of the wall. It feels like anything past this point is going to be brands literally, you know, talking about sex or cursing or just kind of just pushing the boundary to push the boundary, you know? So like that really made me step back and think, okay, where is our clout? Cause like for me personally, a lot of what helped, I'd built the account primarily just through like organic community building, like, and there was nothing, there's no like trick that I landed going into it, but like toward the first year of doing it, when it was maybe around like 20 or 30,000 followers, I started just like interacting a lot more with these online joke writers, like the people that that fall victim to people like Fuck Jerry or the Fat Jewish, and getting to know them on like a personal level and then interacting with them with the brand was really cool, because it was like I was realizing there was all these circumstances where they're getting stuff stolen by other brands, and then it's like no one's really listening or doing anything about it. Like, luckily since then, like, other people have stepped in. Like, there's been the whole fuck Jerry movement, and you know, it's, there's a little bit more of a limelight on the issue. But yeah, it's such a weird space to be in, because you need, as a brand, like, you need to have clout. Like, you can't just talk about these issues and then all of a sudden not do anything about it, because now you have mobs of people online that are actively ready to jump on a brand and be like, where's your proof? Like, where's your clout in this situation? So yeah, it's a very strange time to be in with that stuff. And I think you're totally right. Like, a lot of these brands, they'll talk the talk. It's really easy to do that on Twitter. But when it comes down to it, I mean, what are the areas that you're actually making a difference when it comes down to the voice you're trying to implement? And that's a really tough space to be in.
Yeah, I also think consumers are becoming more skeptical of these platforms in general. Like, it used to be that, like, oh, haha, like, this fun brand is posting on Facebook where I love to spend time. And now it's just like,
it's
Facebook
so tired.
Is ruining democracy. Like, Instagram is doing this. Like, Twitter is, you know, making everyone want to turn into a Nazi. Like, so it's like, I think it's like, it's like a double backlash too. Cause it's like, first of all, you're like investing resources into these potentially toxic platform. And I don't even, and then like also, like promoting messages that you can't back up. It's just like a lose-lose.
Yeah. And then like everyone just as a whole, it's almost like, it's like the rising tide raises all ships. Like, everyone's already mad online. So like, it's like, we're already at this boiling point, and then we get to just lash out at wherever the easiest target is. And brands, you know, it's like no one out there, like, in their right mind on like a personal level is just wanting to defend.
Oh my
brands.
God. It's funny though. You say that. Okay. My friend runs a Instagram account called Bird Graveyard.
Uh-huh.
And it's just where people post, I don't know if it's still up. It keeps getting taken down though, because I mean, it might still be up. It's really great. But people just post like videos of them destroying scooters. So like, he reposts videos of people destroying Bird scooters, which are, I'm sure you know what Bird scooters are, but they're those like electric scooters.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody hates
them. Okay, but like, no, there's people that are so loyal to Bird, and they're like, how could you do this? Like, this is private property. Like, I'm reporting you. Like, I found out where you live. Like, I don't hurt these birds.
God.
And it's like, oh my God, who are you protecting this corporation? Like, calm down. Like, I mean, I don't know. It's weird. Like, weirdly, I was just like thinking, like, who the fuck is sympathetic to a brand in 2019, except maybe Bird scooter fanatics.
No, you're right. Yeah, though. You're right. Like, it's easy for someone. So like, I wrote this article the other week, and I was kind of trying to categorize the different people that are loyal or critical of brands. And the way I framed it in this article was that there's people who are primarily leftists, like anarchists, communists, socialists, yeah, those types, who are critical of brands, like you had alluded to earlier, based solely on the fact that they're just anti-capitalism, anti-advertising. Yeah. So, like, there's that, like, minority sect of critical people. And then next to them is, like, the more, like, the people that aren't thinking about it in those same systemic ways, but they just have this overarching fear and feeling that, like, what brands are doing is, it's making them feel uneasy, and, like, it's just not, they don't like the direction of all this, so they're critical of it just kind of as a general rule. And then, like, you move over to the people that are positive with it, and, like, I think you find the most people are in this weird category where they know that it's a brand advertising to them, but at the same time, they're willing to just accept it and be like, this is fun. This is just the way it is now. Like, I'm just going to go with it. And then you have on the furthest category people who I think mostly are younger, who don't really think actively that, like, they don't realize that they're being advertised to. So, like, when they go to those situations, like with the Bird scooters, and they're defending this brand, like, in their mind, they're not defending advertising. Like, they're not thinking about it in that way. And then it just becomes this kind of, like, mindless area where, like, you can really, brands really exploit that sect of people who just don't really think about the repercussions or, like, the structural consequences of what they're doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, it's very bizarre. Like, my coworker, he brought up this, I don't know if he came up with it or if he just saw it online, because I feel like I've been seeing it more recently, but he said that, like, more brands are trying to be like people now, and more people are trying to be like brands.
Yeah, like, do you agree with that? Yeah, I mean, I've written a lot about that. Like, I wrote this thing on sort of, like, people's tendency to use ad speak in their personal posts on social media, and, like, basically post what are construed as advertisements, like fake ads, basically.
Yeah.
On Instagram specifically, and, like, that's because they're sort of, like, trying to monetize themselves. And more people just do, that's, like, sort of slipped into culture in general. Like, people will post a coffee, like, at Starbucks, thank you, or, you know, like, whatever. Yeah. Like, it's that kind of stuff. And so I think influencer culture is responsible for that blurring. I think it's, like, people who are increasingly monetizing their own personal brands and relying on brand partnerships to do that, and sort of, like, that being an aspirational profession. I think that all plays a part in it, but
definitely,
yeah,
like,
crazy.
Just, like, noticing that, what you just said, and then thinking about this whole trend in general, it does make sense, like, as the past 10 years have evolved, that these weird lines have just started to blur between people and brands, and it's made this entire landscape, it's stuff that it feels like if you told someone that this is what was going to be happening 20 years ago, they'd be like, what are you talking about? And now it feels normal. It's like when I see friends of mine doing these weird brand, like, ambassador style posts, like, it doesn't even strike me as odd now. Like, it's just, like, a normal thing. Like, people are their own personal brands everywhere, and it's like no wonder all these brands are trying to act like people.
It's a weird line.
Just in general, like, how important is it, do you think, for the average person, or even brand, like say small business, to be up to date with all of this, just internet culture as a whole?
Oh, I think it's really important. I mean, I think, well, I'll answer it separately. For brands, I think it's really important because, like, if you're, like, a brand manager or marketer, you kind of can't effectively advertise unless you can, like, read the room a little bit, you know? So I think that they should, like, you know, be up with, like, norms. They don't have to know about every stupid random trend, but, like, just generally have an understanding of how these platforms work, social norms on them, like, you know, just so that you don't seem out of touch, or, like, have some, like, botched execution. I don't know. For regular people, like, I don't know. I mean, I think that, like, regular people should have more, like, skepticism around it. Like you said, like, people should recognize when they're being marketed to, and that's sometimes increasingly hard. But I don't think that, like, if you're, like, a successful lawyer, like, that you need to know, like, the latest TikTok star or whatever,
right.
So kind of depends on the industry you're in.
Yeah, definitely. What's something that you've been covering or thinking about recently regarding all this that you wish people in general were talking about more?
That's such a good question. I don't know. I'm really into like I said, I write a lot about influencer culture and how that's shaping us. And I think that a lot of people reflexively hate on it, or there's this like, I don't know, there's this like vitriol towards like influencers where people just like hate like influencers. And it's crazy because at the same time, like all of these kids are aspiring to be influencers. And I think that that industry needs to be taken more seriously. Like, I think that like brands have actually like, I feel like marketing people are the ones that are most knowledgeable about this. Like they're starting to understand like the nuances of doing an influencer campaign. Like you can't just pay someone with a million followers, like expect a million impressions or like a million sales. Right. Like, but weirdly, like outside of the marketing industry, people don't really get what they don't, there's no oversight with a lot of like these, like the influencer deals, like these people are getting fucked over a lot. I'm really sympathetic to them. Like people really, I wrote this story about this influencer management company that literally just stopped paying people with like millions of followers that did campaigns for like Walmart, 23andMe, like all this stuff.
So insane.
And people, and people on Twitter are like, oh, victimist crime, fuck Walmart and fuck these influencers. And it's like, what?
Yeah.
First of all, they should be paid for their work. Also, like, what? Like, I don't know. You wouldn't say that if it was a traditional ad and the videographer didn't get paid, you know?
Right. I think so much of that, so this is where I come from with this. I think there's a really big misunderstanding of what the definition of an influencer is. Because I feel like, you mentioned how, like, marketing people tend to get this. Like, I feel like the language evolved in the circles of marketing. And the problem is that for someone like me as a social media manager, if I go, like, I remember a couple years ago, I went to this big, it's called Social Media Worlds, I think, conference in San Diego. And going to this conference, like, there was hundreds of speakers at this thing. And going through, like, the brochure or whatever, like, looking at who they were and, like, what they did and all that, almost all of them have social media influencer as their title. And like when you actually listen to them speak and like see what they do, they aren't social media influencers in the way that you're describing them. Like these are people who are people that work in marketing. They probably work for an agency somewhere and they're basically spending time writing ebooks about Instagram trends or whatever and then selling them to people at conferences. You know what I mean? It's like there's that definition, which is what I tend to point out. Like I call these people out all the time because I think it's all snake oil.
Well, those
like,
people, that is total snake oil. Yeah. That is total snake oil. But like, you know, if you think about like the working mom that's like has a lifestyle business that she's monetizing in Missouri or
that's
whatever.
Totally
like,
different.
It's totally different. And I think, and also so is the like 14-year-old TikTok star, right? Like I think that like it's, it's so ever evolving. And I think that there needs to be more scrutiny on all of it. Like you said, I think, but I think not only should like those type of kind of scammy influencers be called out, but also like brands fucking people over should be called out. Like it's not a victimless crime for a brand to fuck over an influencer. And it happens a lot more than people think. So it's just, there's a lot of bad actors in that industry, I think, because it's, like, not, there's no oversight.
Right. And everybody wants to be a star. I mean, it sucks because, like, obviously Kim Kardashian is an influencer just by trade. Like, her entire public persona is millions of followers, millions of impressions, one of the most famous person in the world. And then you got kids, like you said, that are growing up that want to be that. And they're, in their minds, like, if you're some kid in like a rural area that doesn't have a lot of industry connections and you're 14 and you're thinking, how can I be this thing? Like, you're looking up all the tricks of the trade. You're buying followers. You're, what I mean?
Like,
you're doing all this
like,
stuff.
In my experience, it's not kids that want fame. Like, less and less, I think kids want fame. It's more that they recognize, like, what you can get with online clout, which is basically anything you want. Like, literally. Like, I mean, having 10,000 followers, 100,000 followers on Instagram is only going to help you. And it's only going to help you no matter what career you get, like whether or not you want to monetize it directly. But like, I mean, I see this with kids that start a lot of like big interest based accounts and then run online stores based off of them. Like, or kids with big meme accounts, like basically they post memes, scale it up to hundreds of thousands of followers. And then it's like, you have a valuable account with hundreds and thousands of followers. Like, that's not attached to your name. So you can actually even do more with it, you know? And like, I think like kids inherently recognize the value. Eugene Wei wrote this like really good piece. I don't know if you saw it. He's a like product person in Silicon Valley, but he wrote this amazing thing of like the, like sort of the market for social status, I get, I guess, and like how these apps like facilitate this economy based on social status and clout. And I think like a lot of people treat it as like, oh, you just want to be famous, or like, oh, whatever. And it's like, no, I think like these kids recognize that like if you have an audience, that's power because you have people listening to you. And so you can sell to them. You can make them do something that you want. Like, that's valuable.
Yeah. And a lot of them are like absolute masters of what they do. Like, you're talking about meme culture. Like, I'm in a group DM right now on Instagram with Steak'em, actually, with like Tank Sinatra on Instagram and like white people humor. And like, these are guys, like, they're getting hit up by companies who literally want to buy their accounts just for their followers. And like, they have people pitching other accounts. They have kids who want to buy their accounts to be like, can I turn this into a page and then resell it to someone else? Like, there's a whole weird industry based all around this like audience building tool you're talking about, because it is all clout.
It's just, and it's so, I think, like, I don't know. In one sense, I think it's very savvy of kids to realize that. Like, it is very, like, I mean, the whole system is dark, but like, I guess that's why when people write it off or think it's stupid, I'm like, well, people are making a lot of money.
Yeah, and
this,
like,
is a new internet economy that we live in. And like, by the way, this is very valuable for brands. So I don't know. Yeah. I don't think they should be written off so easily.
Yeah.
Well, or written off as like wannabe celebrities.
Yeah. It's easy to make fun of them when you're older and cynical and you're looking at it through this limited lens of just like, I'm in this industry. It's like, okay, well, by the time, like, when we were younger, the industries that we're currently working in, like, there weren't journalists writing about internet culture. There weren't brand social media managers. Yeah. So, like, this whole thing changes so fast. Like, what's it going to look like by the time they're our age? You know what I mean? Like,
I know. We'll be streaming through our brains or something.
Yeah. We'll be irrelevant. Like, what are we?
Oh, my God.
What are we even doing?
I know. I already feel irrelevant. I'm always like, whatever.
Yeah. So do you, just like last couple questions, I really appreciate all
no worries.
The time. This has been great.
Do
you think that journalism as a whole is better off or worse off with the internet?
Oh my gosh. This kind of goes back to what we were talking about before, which is like, it's so hard. Like, I feel like I have thoughts on this and then I'm so uninformed and like, I don't like, I feel like I want to ask that question of like people that really understand like old media too. Like, I feel like I have my entire career and opportunity because of this new media environment that we live in, which is, like you said, very bad because of all the clickbait crap and like, you know, misinformation and all these other problems and like dying business models. But it also, you know, like you said, has like made room for coverage like mine, which I wouldn't have had 10 years ago, an opportunity like I have now. So it's so hard. I think overall though, I don't know. I think we're just like in an area where we're figuring that out.
Right.
I don't know if it's better or worse. Cause I don't know, like, local news getting gutted, but at the same time, more people have a voice and more people are able to like shape coverage. Like, and there's also more ability to call out bad coverage, you know, like it used to be like people would just print something and there was no, you know, you could write a letter to the editor, but like now you see, like, I'm just thinking of like Jill Abramson's book, like being fact checked in real time. Mm-hmm. Like, that kind of stuff is good. It holds people accountable.
Yeah, way more value in that. And yeah, and like you said, it's great having living in a time where like there are way more opportunity for minority voices specifically to get out there, and like all these new media platforms that just never existed before the internet, which is
and these new media platforms have given opportunities to like not like people like myself and like other people that wouldn't have ever been, like, I never in my life thought I would ever end up being a journalist. Like, ever, wouldn't have even, you know, I wouldn't have thought about that. And so, like, I think having like more ways into journalism is good. Like, it used to be this very hierarchical system and you paid your dues as this and you leveled up. And now it's like, because of social media, there's just so many more ways in.
Yeah.
Especially for women and, like you said, minorities. So, I guess we're in a good place, but I don't know. I just hope everyone stays in business.
I really appreciate you kind of being like in between and saying you don't know, because that's something that none of us say enough at this point. Like, it's like so many times, like, I know my knee-jerk reaction, even when I don't fully know the depth of a given topic, when someone asks me a question, I just want to answer it. But you're like, I don't know. That's more people should be saying, I don't know.
I know. Well, that's the good part about being a journalist, is because like you don't have to know anything. You just ask people and they'll tell you, you know.
Just report.
Exactly. but yeah.
Very cool. So last question then, this is pretty much the other side of that coin. Do you think that just the world in general is better or worse off with the internet?
I think it's better. I mean, like I said, I'm really, even though I'm, well, I guess I'm contradicting myself in the sense that, like, I have a very dark view of humanity and society at some point, but overall, I think it's better off because I think it's better off. It's provided economic opportunity. It's provided a lot of good things. Like, I think it's broadened everyone's world. I mean, like, I think we're in this, like, really bad time of it right now, mm-hmm. where these platforms are really negative, like Facebook specifically. But, like,
I like how you lower your YouTube. Voice.
I know. Well, they know what I think of them. But yeah, I mean, overall, I think it's good because it's connecting more people is if done ethically is a positive thing for society. So
yeah, I always tell people we're internet babies. It's like there's so many things that, like, I tweet or even just saying on this podcast, there's so many times I'll be publicly saying something or doing something online, and it's like, in hindsight, yeah, you might think, oh, I wish I would have worded it this way, I wish I would have done this way, but, like, we're all in this very, very, very early stage, and, like, no one really knows how to communicate. Like, that's why there's so much irony on the internet. Like,
yeah.
we're just like, we can't figure this out, so let's just be absurd, you know?
Like, yeah. It's also crazy to think about, like, there was this, like, I don't know, Nat Geo thing called Valley of the Boom. It was this, like, miniseries on, I guess, the dot-com bubble, mm-hmm. which, like, I wasn't really, like, sentient or paying attention whenever that was, like, so long ago. Like, I was in, like, elementary school or whatever. But, like, I feel like even then, like, we didn't have social media. We didn't have, like, the internet as I know it, which is social media, which mm-hmm. is, like, that's what I associate with the modern internet. And so, like, I don't know. We haven't really been online for that long, and social media is new, and imagine in 30 years what it's going to be like.
I can't. I literally can't. I mean, I wish I could project, but I have no idea.
Probably a dystopia, but maybe it's going to be really good.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Probably more Black Mirror-esque, but we'll see.
Yeah.
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 Well, Taylor, I really appreciate you talking and sharing your takes on all this stuff. It was really... really an honor to get to talk
to
you.
God,
I know you've been doing this for forever, and, like, I'm still really new to this whole field and this industry, and it's cool getting to talk to people that are so immersed in it. Like, you've spent the past 10 years doing this, and it's really, really cool.
Life, I know. Well, oh my God, I know, it's like a third of my life. Wait, also, so great chatting with you. I'm such a fan, so it was really great. Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, of course. Was there anything you needed to plug about, like, what you're writing or doing right now? Like,
follow me on Instagram. That's my only plug.
I haven't seen it. You're trying to move people from Twitter to Instagram, right?
Yes, I can't have Twitter be, I can't have all my followers on Twitter. Twitter's a cesspool. I'm trying to get off Twitter. So, but I can't get off Twitter until everyone follows me on Instagram. So please follow me on Instagram.
All right. I'll throw that in the show notes then.
Yeah. I know. Every day I tweet it, and, like, my coworkers are like, shut the fuck up about the Instagram. And I'm like, I don't care.
Yeah.
Like, it's gotten me 12,000 followers. So there you go.
Good. I'm glad it's working. I was going to say, it's one of those things where you'll tweet something about internet culture and it's like 1,000 likes. Then you're like, follow me on Instagram. It's like 10 likes.
Yeah. And everyone's like, fuck you. Or, like, follow me back. And I'm like, no, that's not the point.
Right. Well, thanks again, Taylor. I really appreciate it. And
yeah,
I'll catch you back online.
All right. Bye.
All right. See ya.